This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 46, part 2.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. This is part 2 of our conversation with Dr. Tricia Dowling. If you have not checked out last week's episode, I would recommend that you pause this, go back and check out part 1, because we do build off of that here in part 2 of the conversation. Another great conversation where we dive a little more into compassion versus empathy in this conversation.
But first, this is a big one. That's a big one. This is a great, great topic of conversation today, because in veterinary medicine right now, this is at the forefront of everybody's minds: compassion fatigue, empathy. And Dr. Dowling, as you mentioned in the last episode, wow, does she have a way of distilling hard, difficult information into a very succinct points that we can understand with our little mini brains compared to her.
No doubt when you say little mini brains. I always remember back in school, you know, all the professors are obviously very, very good at what they teach, but there's a few that just pop out where you're like, can I just borrow their brain? Like, is there a way that I can just download that information into my brain?
Completely.
Yeah. I remember a few of us students, we'd even joke about that, where it's just like, I just need to like get her brain for like just a day and download it.
And she was one of them that definitely, definitely stuck out that way. Yeah, she'd get running all those different antibiotics and be like, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble.
I know. The thing when I knew I was in trouble was when she would make jokes that were like so witty and so fast that I couldn't even understand them, because I was like, I don't even know the material well enough to get the joke. So like the joke's on me. But
so true. So true. But yeah, a great conversation today for it sure. Is.
Hey. Before we go, I guess, any further into that, what is happening in the world of Jonathan?
Ooh, we got lots on the go. So Bridgeland Vet Clinic, we postponed for 3 weeks because of construction, which again, I think in the end will be a benefit. We have priming and millwork starting today. And it's really interesting because this millwork, if you talk about millwork, which is just basically the cabinetry, all those different pieces, like they've been in production for the last 2 months. It's really exciting just to see how far this project's come along. We have team training in the background, the amount of partners, like when we delayed, we had to put a list together of all those that we had to contact. And I think we had in between 12 to 15 major people that we had to phone, you know, within the day to let them know that this was being backed up just because of the scheduling and training and interactions. We have our x-ray going in literally right now as we speak. It's a super exciting time. So clinic administrator, she was down there this morning making sure all was going well, and we keep on going. So exciting times. Wish we were open earlier, but at the end of the day, this will probably pay off.
I agree. So all the pets in Calgary that are eagerly awaiting, stay tuned. Early August, you said, is the
new- early August. I think we already have 60 emails of people that are interested in getting their pets in. We've been doing quite a bit of advertising locally and just getting to know our local community. And it's been great, the turnout. I literally took a call that a lady wanted a Lyme disease on or vaccine on Friday. So I can't provide your needs because we're not open until early August. It's good times.
Okay. All righty. Well, before we dive in, I'm going to throw it back to you for another quick tip.
Oh, look at that. Quick tip for today. Coming into, for us Canadian listeners, July long weekend. July 1st is Thursday. It's very easy to get stuck in a rut or get stuck in your habits. So this quick tip is as much for me, as much for Mikey B, who doesn't even know what the quick tip is today, but my ask for everybody this week, do something a little different. Step outside of the normal habits. Step outside of what you do day to day and go do something different. Whether that's go check out a different restaurant post-COVID, if you can. Go for a walk in a different park compared to the park you normally do. Go take a bite of something unique that you normally wouldn't reach out to in the grocery store. I'm putting this out to myself. It's a great time to stretch yourself. We're coming into the summer season. Let's go for it. Let's try something different this week. So quick tip, try something different.
Nice. I like it. And we're time stamping it a bit. We're recording this late June. So for our Canadian listeners, July 1st coming up, Canada Day. And for our American listeners, Independence Day, July 4th. I'm sure they must take Monday as the holiday, or I'm not sure how that works, but hope everyone had great holidays. Moving on, part two with Dr. Trish Dowling. I'm not going to read out her bio again. You got to go catch that in part one. Basically, amazing teacher, professor, has won all sorts of teaching awards, but never stops moving forward. If we weren't amazed as students with her knowledge of pharmacology, you know, then all of a sudden 2010, she launches this mindfulness course for veterinary students, you know, always kind of pursuing the next sort of thing. And I think she said, I don't know if it was in part one or part two. She said, if I'm part of the problem, I should be part of the solution. And just that's an amazing perspective and way of looking at things. So without any further ado, I give you part two of our conversation with Dr. Trisha Dowling. All right, everyone, we are back with Dr. Trish Dowling. If you didn't see last week's episode, make sure you go and check it out. We hear Trisha's backstory and then the buildup of her journey into and kind of experiencing mindfulness over the last decade. I guess you've been practicing mindfulness and researching it more than a decade. Moving into this next part of the conversation, we would like to see how compassion kind of links in with mindfulness. And I know for me, back in when I was in vet school, I couldn't break empathy and compassion apart. Like, to me, they were the same. And people would talk about compassion fatigue, empathy fatigue. They just meant the same thing, but turns out that's not the case. So tell us a little bit more about how compassion does not fatigue.
Okay. Yeah, this is sort of one of my little pet peeves. And as a veterinarian, when you have a pet, you got to pet it. And so this is also some really interesting work that has evolved through the mindfulness movement. So mindfulness, the definition is simply paying attention on purpose in a particular way and non-judgmentally. So that's just thinking about your toes and that sort of thing. But in the practices, in the original mindfulness-based stress reduction course, there was a lot about compassion, but it was more implicit. And there's been a lot of movement to make compassion work explicit. And there's an amazing researcher named Dr. Kristen Neff, who's at the University of Texas. And she's been kind of the leader in the area of compassion and self-compassion. And so she teaches a specific course on mindfulness, self-compassion. So some of the information that I'm going to refer to is definitely going to be from her. So Mike, you alluded to that. We've got these words, compassion and empathy, and like, aren't they the same? And I actually was in that same boat, and I was on a retreat, and one of the teachers there, a palliative care pediatrician, that would be a hard job. She had gone to this teaching and learning symposium in Colorado before coming to our retreat. And she was talking about this and how compassion and empathy are not the same thing. And so we call mind puzzles a koan. And so I'm sitting there going, you know, what's the difference? And so then I was able to go and find the recording of the person that she spoke about, who gave this presentation in Colorado. So this is Dr. Tanya Singer, who is a neuroscientist at the Max Planck Institute in Germany. And she has done some of this amazing work on compassion and what is the difference. So I watched this like 12-minute video and it just blew my doors off. It changed the way I thought about everything, especially in veterinary medicine. So Tanya's work, that compassion and empathy are not the same thing, is really well known in the neurophysiology circles, but I find that healthcare's missed it. So we keep seeing this term compassion fatigue, and it's a misnomer. And I think this is where language matters because compassion fatigue sounds bad. I'm going to tell you that compassion is a skill and it can be trained. Compassion is a trainable skill, feels a whole lot better in my body. It's not compassion fatigue, it's empathy that fatigues. So here's how Tanya Singer figured this out. They're in different places in your brain. So to do empathy, they took married couples who presumably liked each other, and they put them in twin MRIs, and they had like cameras so they could see each other. So they would take a pin and prick the hand of the wife, and she'd say, ow, and her pain center would light up. And the husband who liked her would go, ow, too, and his pain center would light up. Not quite as bright, but the same exact center in the brain. That's empathy. Empathy is feeling the pain of the other. Now, it's feeling any emotion of the other. We don't mind feeling happy when you feel happy. Those are good ones. We're just going to deal with the adverse ones here. So taking on the pain of the other. Now, this is how we get communication and resonance started between humans, right? We're social creatures. So in order to understand you, it really helps if I understand what it's like to be you, right? And so in veterinary medicine, when I've got a client that I'm helping through a euthanasia decision, absolutely, I'm going to say, I've lost a lot of my own animals. I've had to make this decision. I know what it feels like to be you. They're going to trust a veterinarian who's dealt with an animal with cancer, who's dealt with an animal with a broken leg or part or whatever like that. This is how we build rapport with our clients. And as long as I can do that, I get that started, that's okay. Now, Tanya breaks this sort of into a PowerPoint presentation with dividing lines. This is where it becomes problematic, though. If I get locked in to that empathy that's for an adversive thing, then I'm like, oh, I remember what it was like when I had to euthanize my animal. And that's very distressing to me. So we get into empathetic distress. And then we can keep building on that. If we don't have the mindfulness tools, we just keep building on that. And if, you know, I have four euthanasias in a day, at the end of the day, I'm withdrawing. I'm becoming robotic because it hurts me too much to be doing this rapport back and forth with the clients. And so at the end of that, I start doing depersonalization of my clients. I go through, you know, burnout. And then this is where people leave the profession, right? This is why I can't do euthanasias, right? Because I can't tolerate it. So this is what fatigues. This is what is in that pain center in the brain. And we know from so many studies, we have a pain course in the curriculum now. Pain, uncontrolled pain is depleting emotionally and physically. We treat pain in our animals now because we know that they don't heal well if they have uncontrolled pain. But that's what happens to us. We have uncontrolled pain and then it burns us out. We leave our beloved profession that we've put so much work into. Now, here's the lifting up. What is compassion? So empathy is me-centered. I feel your pain. And if I get locked into I, then it becomes problematic. Compassion starts with empathy. I feel your pain, and now I wish you not to have it. It's other focus. So if I can take it in, not own it, recognize it, but not own it, and say, now I wish you not to have pain, then I lift it up into a higher place. And that is going to make me then care for you, help you through this bad situation with your animal, get up and let somebody sit on the bus, right? That sort of thing. So compassion shows in a different part of the brain. It's in the centers that release oxytocin and dopamine. Well, what do we know about oxytocin, right? That's the love hormone. Is love depleting? Never. Absolutely neurophysiological. Compassion does not fatigue. Empathy fatigues. But you can train it so that your mind goes to the compassion networks and activates your dopamine and oxytocin. And again, they can train this with people through these meditation techniques. And they're kind of simple and they're kind of fun. One of the ways we do a practice called loving kindness or metta. And we sit quietly, we focus on our breath, and then we start to think of somebody who's been a great mentor to us. And then we send them these wishes, and you can customize them. Mine go like this. May you be safe and free from inner and outer harm. May you be happy. May you be healthy and whole to whatever degree possible. May you live with ease. Then we send them to ourselves, which is hard for a lot of people. People want to add but. No buts. You send it to yourself. Then you practice sending it to somebody you don't know very well, the secretary, the cashier, the grocery store, the bus driver. Then you send it to people for whom you have a difficult relationship. That can be tricky. We start with somebody just minor. And we're recognizing the common humanity. This is part of compassion, that we all want to be safe and free. We all want to live with ease. We all want to be healthy. Even if your way of going about it isn't very good for me, I need to recognize that. Then in our class, we send it to our classmates. We send it to the whole college. We send it to the whole city, the world, the universe. We recognize that even people that are starting wars and doing bad things, they still have those basic requirements. That's what they're looking for. They're just not doing it in a very good way. And if we can do this, this is the only way that bad things happen, is when we other people. And when I recognize that you want to be safe and free and happy, I can't kill you quite so easily, right? And so we're building these networks. This is why the Dalai Lama says, my religion is kindness. So we start these practices and it builds on this. So first of all, we're working with other people. We can take this to our clients. We can walk in there and go, oh, not another cat lady. Right? I'm a cat lady. You can walk in and say, you know, I have a cat, you have a cat, you know, even if I don't have cats, you're another human being who wants to be happy. How can I help? Right? We can practice this. When you are driving and somebody cuts you off, instead of doing the good old, you can go, may you be safe and free from inner and outer harm. Maybe you're getting your wife to the hospital, she's having a baby, right? You can start to find that space again to change your thoughts. Best place ever, you're on the plane and there's turbulence. What do you like to do? You know, do this, right? You breathe and then I send it to the pilot. May you be safe and free from inner and outer harm. And I relax. Works like a charm.
So this is a course that you're now teaching at WCVM? Is that when you say?
Since 2010, I have taught this as an elective course at the WCVM. Yeah. And so 20 students can take the course only because we lay on the floor. There's no PowerPoints, no podiums. And that's the Alberta room is the only room in the building with carpet. It is a vet college. And we can only fit 20 people lying on the floor. And the third floor at the end of the day is nice and quiet. And there's no class afterwards. It's an end of the day class. So whatever that is, 11 years times 20 people. So we've got a lot of people out there. Now you kind of asked about like even coming up with this. There are a lot of closet meditators in the college. And I won't out them. There's a lot of people that have a personal practice. But it takes something for somebody to take their personal practice and make it public like this and be a teacher. And I went to a conference and we had a workshop on when you decide you want to do the teacher training and spread this. And we ended up with one mission statement, when the love overcomes the fear. Because you bet that first course I took, every time it was time for the class, I wanted to run out the door. I had to teach yoga to 20-somethings. But it's mindfulness yoga. It's just simply like, how does that make you feel? Like, you know, you don't have to be a pretzel or anything like that. So, and the good yoga students would say, this is not like the yoga I do in other places. This is very slow. It's the mind-body connection. So that's the business about empathy and compassion. They're in different places in your brain. We can give you the tools, they can train it. And after training compassion like this, they've got studies to show it works. They set up a waiting room and all the chairs are filled. And then the person who's either had compassionate training or somebody who hasn't, they come in and sit in the last chair. And then somebody walks in on crutches and they just look to see if they give them the chair. And somebody who's been trained in compassion is much more likely to get up and give them the chair. They do this with small children, and then they give them stickers, you know, high value when you're a kid, right? And they give them like envelopes, like a sick kid and a strange kid and their best friend. Well, at first they just give them all to their best friend. Then they do the compassion training and the kids give the stickers to the other kids. You can prove that this works. And again, this is a practice that feels good. So now I want to go into the self-compassion piece a little bit, because this is kind of humorous and fun. I think that a lot of us in vet med, we have compassion for everybody else except for ourselves. We forgot that one. We think that we've got to drive ourselves really harshly. And we talked about intergenerational trauma. We got to drive ourselves really harshly to succeed. We're worried that they made a mistake letting us into vet school or letting us pass the board exams, right? We have all that sort of stuff. So I don't know if you've had anybody talking about imposter syndrome on your podcast. Have you covered that yet?
We haven't gone deep in it, I don't think.
No, everybody we haven't.
It, but we haven't drilled down into it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to take you before imposter syndrome. So you guys would agree imposter syndrome is pretty prevalent in our profession. You know, everybody's looking around thinking, I'm the dumb one. I don't belong here. They've made a mistake, that sort of thing. Okay. And so it's so widespread, and they give you little tools about don't think that way. Well, that's a little bit like cognitive behavioral therapy, right? Stop thinking that, you think it harder. No matter how many times I say nobody cares, you're all going to get a doctor in front of your name. They all still have imposter syndrome. So let's take a step back. Okay. We've all got imposter syndrome. What does that mean? Where is that coming from? It's coming from a little voice inside our head that's talking, right? You don't belong here, because it's not me telling you that, right? There's a little voice inside your head telling you stuff. Okay, so I have that little voice that all day long is saying, you're too fat. You don't exercise enough. Who do you think you are, right? You guys have that voice?
Oh, yeah. In different ways, different times. Yeah, it pops its ugly head out. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, I've only ever met one person who said they did not have that voice. And they were a surgeon. sorry to pick on surgeons, but so if we all have that, what does that mean? It's probably evolutionary, right? There's a reason for it. Okay, it is evolutionary. And this is Kristen Neff's work as well. So go back to the time you were like a little slug thing. You couldn't communicate very well, but you had to figure out really quick how to make those big people like you. Otherwise, they left you out. And the ice flow and the coyotes got you or whatever. The polar bears got you. Okay. So it's very important for you to stay safe by figuring out real quick what made mommy and daddy mad, right? So it's like, don't make a mess. That makes mommy mad. Don't play with his tools. That makes daddy mad, right? So you start to learn these things. So that little voice in your head develops to keep you safe so you don't get in trouble. Don't do that. Don't do this. You then get bigger and you go to school and you learn the norms of the playground, the norms of the classroom. Don't talk too loud. Don't, you know, take too much candy. Don't try to manipulate the game, right? So that little voice is in your head to keep you safe. But what do you think happens when you hit puberty? You already know all those social rules. So guess what? The little voice's job is done. But nobody tells you can tell it to shut the F up. Have you ever had a class on talking to the back, to the voice in your head? So in the biz, we call this the inner critic. And the inner critic loves to be judgmental. Remember, the definition of mindfulness is non-judgmentally, but we got a voice in our head that judges everything, right? And so especially for us keeners who go to vet school, we got this big voice saying, you're the imposter here. You know, oh my God, flunk a test, does it go crazy, right? So guess what? There's whole courses, and one of my teachers, my certification teacher, Dr. Mark Coleman, he even writes books on this. So he's a Brit. So he has lots of rules for working with the inner critic, and he's funny. So one of the first things you can do with this, first I'll go back to Kristen Neff. First thing you can do is recognize it. It's there to help you. So when you're having a bad time and your inner critic is piling on, you can go, you know, I know you have my best interest at heart, but you're really not being very helpful right now. So shut the F up. So first give it some loving kindness because it is part of you. Now you can have fun with it. You can sit there and say, you can come up with a persona for your inner critic. Mark's a Brit, so his is a British judge in the black robe and the white wig intoning on. So he can talk back to it. For me, it's not a person. Some people, it may be a relative, it could be a teacher, it could be a coach. I have such a smorgasbord that I just decided mine is a yappy Yorkshire Terrier. Who do you think you are? You're different from you. Nobody really likes you. You're never going to do things that I'm trying. So then I can sort of mentally go, shut up. I can kick it in the head.
Oh, I love that. That's a good choice. Good choice for...
So in the class, so, I tell people, come up with an image.
And consciously, or I don't even know how to describe this, you're doing that in your head. You're thinking that. You're verbalizing it in your head. You're making those actions.
Yeah, you're catching that little voice before you're buying into it. You know, who died and left you king? You know, like, who gave you all the authority? You know, it's thoughts. It's not necessarily facts. You know, what are the facts that no one will ever love me, right? But we have heard it since babyhood, so we believe it. We give it credibility. You can try to agree with it. You're the worst mother in the world. I'm number one. Yay! So there's a whole lot of ways that you can play with it, but you don't fight back with it, right? You can sit there and say, oh, you know, I'm such a bad teacher or whatever. And then, you know, I try to argue it. No, you know, I got a teaching award. I'm really a good teacher. Ew, well, who do you? You're too big for your britches now, right? Like it'll argue both sides of everything. Like, don't get in a fight with your inner critic because it's been playing along way too long. But all of these skills take practice. So that's how I finish up on this mindfulness, compassion, self-compassion. They are all mental skills. And again, you got to train them, like going to the gym. You got to take that time. And we joke in the business, if you're too busy to meditate for an hour, you should meditate for 2 hours. Because it means you need it. And the more you practice, the more the benefit. And that's been shown in the studies. But even a little bit of practice is better than no practice whatsoever. And in the course, we teach a lot of the different practices. And by the end, we ask the students to start to design what's going to be the program that they can use for the rest of their life. And it may not be a formal meditation program. It might be mindful walking between exam rooms to make sure that when you go in the next exam room, your mind really isn't still in the last exam room. I'm sure you've had that before where you're with a doctor or a veterinarian and they're not even in the room with you. It doesn't feel very good.
Yeah. That's a very useful, good tip. Cause I mean, we all have that run between exam rooms. Okay, Trish, we are running low on time. I feel like we could do like 5 episodes with you. This is amazing. As we wrap up here, we're going to just kind of end on our impact round quickly. A series of quick, short questions for you. So the first question, and you can't answer horse to this, are you a cat or a dog person?
I have to answer both. I'm truly both.
Yeah. And goat. I love how the goat made the trip up here with you.
There's a llama arriving next week.
Oh, yes.
I'm a llama person, too.
True or false? I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a kid.
It came and went. I'll put it that way. I've always been an animal person. I've always been a horse girl. I played with horse toys, not Barbie dolls. But then I come from a very science-based family. So I emerged into it. And then I got the experience. I worked at the large animal clinic and then I found my people.
Yeah. Nice. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
Talk a lot. And they'd call me enthusiastic, which I know means hyperactive. And then I tell them I'm the quiet, shy one of the 4 Dowlings. I'm not even the loud Dowling. I'm the quiet one. My siblings are way louder than me.
That must be fun family get-togethers.
I was going to say, to be a fly on the wall around like the table.
Oh, yeah.
Usually they ask us to tone it down in restaurants.
What is your favorite hobby?
It would be riding.
Riding horse riding, nice. What in this world are you most grateful for?
My family.
Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up here. thank you so, so much for coming. I know I've had you on the list for since we started this podcast, I think.
Yep.
For anyone following along, if they want to reach out, is there a good place that they can connect with you?
Probably the best place would be my email, and even the office phone number gets forwarded to me because I'm on sabbatical. So that's all on the WCBM webpage. Pretty easy to find.
Okay. All right, Trish, as always, the last word goes to you. What message would you like to leave for the veterinary community?
I would say take care of yourself. Self-care only works if you practice it.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.